Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be continuing with an exploration of different health issues, trying to explore the issues that we generally don't hear a lot about, but do impact upon all of us. Please excuse if the technical quality of the program is not always what it should be because I'm not in a studio. I'm not in New York. I'm out and about and trying to do what I can in whatever limited way I am able to get people to refocus on AIDS in a way that they have hitherto not been looking. I believe that in some quarters I'm able to make enough of an impression with the evidence I've been presenting that at least they're stopping for a moment to reevaluate. And hopefully that will prevent some of the pharmaceutical companies from dumping inexpensive but extremely toxic drugs in third world countries that end up causing the very condition that they claim they're trying to prevent. You cannot distinguish the difference between the symptoms of full-blown AIDS or the toxic reactions, iatrogenic reactions of the AZT and DDI and DDC and protease inhibitors. And for the next 2 weeks, I'll be out and about. By the way, when I'm doing these broadcasts, sometimes the volume will not be exactly right. Some of the calls won't be heard as crystal clear because I don't quite simply have the fiber optics to do it. But hopefully you'll still be able to understand most of what is said. I don't eat the food unless I have a chance to see how it's grown, where it's grown, for a very good reason. I just saw a report this morning about college campuses where they independently tested some 67 restaurants and cafeterias and college campuses and found as much as 27% of the produce served was contaminated with E. coli and coliform and all forms of bacteria. So, again, you have no idea how bad stuff can be because you never see it being prepared. The assumption is when you eat in a restaurant, someone has really washed your vegetables. Never make that assumption. Much of the time, it's not washed at all. Or that they've used plastic gloves and some type of utensil to take the raw salad mix to put it on your plate. Not true. They generally reach in with a hand, the same hand that has cleaned dirty dishes, had fingers wrapped around drinking glasses where people who could have had hepatitis or herpes or syphilis or AIDS or anything else, certainly all forms of bacteria, that's on that glass, and now it's on their hands. Now it's when they reach in, put the hand in their salad bowl to take your salad out. And that's why we end up getting sick. So when I travel, first I travel with a lot of little things in bags. And the first thing that happens when I go into a foreign country, I was 3 hours trying to get in Cuba, for example, because they had to look through every single thing and ask questions. They hadn't seen any of this stuff before. And one of the people I met just in the course of my traveling was a fella who was doing a paper on the economic conditions in Cuba and now and what he perceives will happen when Castro no longer is in power. And we debated that for some time because people's impressions of what they want to believe something is versus being on the ground and seeing what it actually is can be radically different. When not all of it wasn't a year and a half ago, I was running with a fellow who had been to Cuba and he waxed on in a very euphoric way about all the things that was happening in Cuba and why. Well, my impressions are completely different. I didn't hold any bias. I didn't need it to be anyway. I didn't need to be, you know, from a conservative or a liberal point of view. I just, here it is. What do I see? Then, you know, try to get a measurement of perspective from what I see. In any case, this guy was there. And he said, where are you going to eat? And I said, well, I'm going to go out in the street, buy some food. He says, how are you going to do that? I said, well, follow me. So we walked out and walked down the street, and every block, someone is selling fruit. Now, this fruit is organic. It's hand-harvested that morning. People get up very early, and they take whatever they can sell to the market. They're allowed to keep whatever they sell. And they generally have these old buckets that they put this stuff in. And I bought a bucket of mangoes for 5 cents. And there's, let's see, it's a dollar gets you 20 pesos, and a peso can get you a lot. And for instance, you can get a whole thing of bananas for a peso, or two watermelons for a peso. And the watermelons are small and very seedy, and kind of a white flesh. You don't see any watermelons like we would have here, which are the larger ones. And not very sweet, but the pineapple are tiny. The pineapple are the size of a, the actual flesh, the size of a small orange. Very, very tiny, tiny pineapple. But very sweet. And they had some, what else they have? They had papaya. So I bought a whole big bushel basket full. He says, how long is it going to take to eat that? I said, today. He said, you're kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. I said, you're going to go have bacon and eggs and sausage, and you're going to feel sluggish. I'm going to have this. I'm going to feel energized. So I said, so he had a day before his business contacts kicked in. And so he said, do you mind if I just hang out with you? And I said, I don't mind. I keep a fast pace, and I go 24 hours. If you want to try it, do so. He says, fine. And it was an experience for him. And he was a nice guy, and wasn't a bother to have this. I was doing these interviews, and I was interviewing so many people. And I had an interpreter through a physician. Well, I went over, and I took bottled water, washed off all the fruit. He said, why are you doing that? I said, well, because whoever's hands have touched this is contaminated, the skin. If I take a knife and cut through the skin, whatever's on the skin goes on the flesh. Therefore, cutting a watermelon or anything else, you must clean the surface. So then I take out this bottle, and it had a little spritzer on it, and it's alcohol. And he said, you're spraying alcohol on a watermelon? I said, yes. I said, I handed him the watermelon before I did. I says, lick the skin. Lick the outside. He said, no. I said, why not? He said, well, it's dirty. I said, yes, it's been on the ground. Hence, there's bacteria on the ground. It's been handled. There's bacteria, viruses, microparasites. The only way to get it off is to wash it. So I'm going to disinfect it with the alcohol. Then I'll pour a bottle of water. And water is very cheap down there. The official water comes from the spring water, and it's fine, nothing wrong with it. And I bought a whole bunch of them. You buy them everywhere. And that's even how, you know, I bathe by pouring gallons of water over my body. You think you got nice hotels to go into? At one or two of the resorts, you certainly do. But then when even I asked them if I could see their water purification plants, and they forget it. I mean, nothing works. So anyhow, so I peeled it off, cleaned it, peeled it off, and mashed it up, and then I put some protein powder in with it, in with a mango. So I had mango puree with a soy protein powder and pineapple puree, and I mixed it all together. And then I took a little bit of rice milk, because I always take some rice milk, and I poured some rice milk in that, and I stirred it all up. I gave him some. And he said, whoa, he said, this is delicious. And I said, yeah, it's delicious. And I explained what was in it. I said, your phytochemicals, all of your carotenoids, which help protect you from the sun, and the free radicals, and vitamins and antioxidants, and complete protein. I said, now that's enough to keep me going for about 5 hours. And then I'll do something else later, and then sometime today I had my own brown rice. I said, because they don't have organic rice there. They have white rice, and I don't eat white rice, but they have organic black beans. And they have other beans as well. You wash the beans and you boil it, and with garlic and onions, and you can buy a humongous amount of garlic. And everybody in Cuba eats garlic and onions in all their different dishes. So throughout the day, this guy is just seeing how to do things. Then it was kind of fun. Because knowing that this was the first time ever for a 45-year-old guy to see how to actually eat healthy And he's from California. He's from Los Angeles. And you'd think that he'd be more aware of healthy choices, but quite simply, he wasn't. So I showed him how to take banana and puree the banana. And you puree it simply. You take a fork and you just mash it up, slightly liquefy it. And the mango is always your liquefier because mango is very juicy. And then put in a little carob. And they also have fresh vanilla beans. So I crush up vanilla bean, put it in, and I stir it all around. And it's a whole different taste. It's like a dessert. And he just couldn't imagine anything that would taste like dessert and be sweet without adding sugar would be good for you. And yet he was eating all kinds of sugary foods and white flour products without realizing that this stuff actually does some good. So this morning I made up a mango papaya, liquefied it with some watermelon juice, and put in some protein powder, and you have that. And just for all of you who would like to try this, because you can buy mangoes, which are very inexpensive, and get it so it's just starting to get soft. You peel it, and then you can put it in your blender. And then put also a little watermelon juice in the blender with it, and your protein powder at the same time, and throw in a banana, and try it. Give it to your kids. Everyone's going to enjoy this. It is a wonderful thing to have in hot weather. It cools you down, energizes you, gradually raises your blood sugar, has great fiber for the intestine. The properties in this will help with blood pressure, cholesterol, obesity, and even heart disease. That's how nice something can be for you, because nature can do a lot if we pay attention to it. You know, I just wanted to share that with you. And also that in the middle of the day, I'm training, and he's looking at me, get dressed up in a black outfit and start running up a hill. So he's on a bike, and he couldn't ride up this hill. And he said, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 105 degrees, it's 100% humidity, and you're running up this stupid hill. I said, yes, I have a championship race in 2 weeks, and I'm into some heavy training, and I intend to do the best race I've done in years. And the only way you do that is you go through the pain. Let the pain be in your training, not in the racing. And hadn't heard of that concept, yet he is a red belt of... He had been practicing the martial arts for 30 years, he said, but never went through this kind of training. Anyhow, I had made watermelon juice with lemon juice and stuck a bottle of water in a freezer and froze it and then put that in there. And you talk about something cooling you down and quenching your thirst. Lemon juice with watermelon juice with crushed up ice, there is nothing that will quench your thirst better. Now, you could do it by juicing a whole lemon. That includes the skin and seeds. Juicing watermelon, but not including the skin or the rind. And mixing the two together, putting in ice in a blender, and then blending it. Absolutely drop dead, quenches your thirst. It's like one of those slushes that people get that causes them a headache after about a second and a half because it's too cold. You won't feel thirsty after this. And it replaces electrolytes, stabilizes blood sugar, has anti-parasitic, antibacterial, antiviral, anti-cancer properties, is great for the skin. It's just terrific. Watermelon and lemon. That's simple. In hot weather, hits the spot. And if you want to do something for your friends, juice that up, blend it up, put in a pinch of honey. They may not like it unless it has a pinch of honey. And then take a little leaf of mint, peppermint, or spearmint leaf, and put it in there. It's almost like a mint julep that you'd serve in the South, but without alcohol. And put that in a nice little wine glass form, wonderful to serve at a brunch or lunch, or just a sip. On to other things. This comes from Luisa Castanagro, I'm probably not pronouncing it right, sent me an article by Jason George, Associated Press. Now, this gets to the idea of what has been happening in the last year. A little background. After over 5 years of doing worldwide research on what actually goes into vaccination programs, in other words, who determines that a vaccine is necessary? Is it because there's truly a public health crisis to which we are actively seeking a vaccine as a solution? The answer is no. It is a manufacturer has been given frequently subsidies by the government to create a vaccine for which there is no major public health crisis. Once they have that vaccine, then you have to sell it. You can't just create a product and say, okay, we did it, let's go to something else. So in effect, they have to create an artificial market for it, like the hepatitis B vaccine for babies. There is no need in the world for that. You will have more babies, and the studies actually show it, die or be injured because of the hepatitis B vaccine than would be helped from having hepatitis exposure. One of the great frauds of public health, of which there are many, but that clearly is not disputable. That's not even arguable. No pediatrician can show you that the average baby is susceptible to hepatitis B. And yet, that is mandated. Why? Because a manufacturer created it. And now when you look deeper, so they created it. So anybody creates anything, you can't just create something and say, now let it be done. Yes, you can, if you understand how the game is played. And the game is played in no small measure because the vaccine advisory committees at the FDA, the CDC, and the National Institutes of Health are all stacked with the majority of those individuals representing the manufacturers. So there is no such thing as an independent objective group. It's all a bias towards let's get this vaccine, which might make us $300 million this year, on a schedule. So everybody has to use it. Well, all that was reported along with the science behind the vaccine efficacy safety scandal. And it's on the webpage. Many people now have been using that information as a basis of either getting additional information or allowing them to make choices. Some of those people are very concerned. Let me just show you one group of people who are concerned about vaccines and what they did about it. This comes from Beaverton, Oregon, July 11th. Four Oregon families filed a lawsuit Wednesday against 12 companies that make drugs or distribute them, claiming their children were harmed by mercury contained in vaccines. Something terrible happened to my son, said Tori Mead, whose son has autistic symptoms the family attributes to mercury in a vaccine. The suit contends that four children, one from each of the families, develop neurological problems as a result of thimerosal, a preservative containing mercury used in multiple dose vials since the 1930s. The families claim that a shortened immunization schedule in the 1990s gave their children toxic levels of mercury. The complaint filed in Monmouth County Court contends 6 million children throughout the United States receive potentially toxic levels of mercury. Five of the companies named in the lawsuit, Pfizer, Abbott Laboratories, Intriga Biosciences, Merck, and Baxter International, were the ones sued. My opinion on this is that once people realize how many things they have been accepting into their body as normal or are all right are actually toxic, I believe that we will see many more such lawsuits. We already are now seeing lawsuits against the American Dental Association. Now we'll start to see it against state dental and individual dental groups within the states. Fluoridation, my newest fluoride paper, is now up on the website, GaryNull.com. And it's the most comprehensive scientific article ever written on fluoride, as is the one called Toxic Teeth on Teeth, as is the one on iatrogenic disease, as is the one on vaccinations. end on AIDS. My AIDS ones are only partially up. I have completed 31 reports, totaling over 1,300 pages. They're going through legal review now. They won't be available for another month. Then they will be up. But as any major public health issue becomes the point of focus, I'll do as comprehensive work on it as possible and put it up there and then read it and see, has this impacted upon you? If it has, what are your options? After all, the good news about all these public issues is that once you're aware of what problems exist, you can then take appropriate steps to not become a victim or redress them if you have. It's not just about which therapies will help you if you're sick. It's what not to do to get sick in the first place, especially when it comes to our children. This comes from Robert Lederman, and it is called The Profitability of an Early Death. I'll quote it. Perhaps you've seen their heartwarming public television service ads about renovating a drug rehab center and how much they care about kids, despite being a cigarette manufacturer. Here's something they left out of those 60-second announcements. The tobacco giant Philip Morris just suffered an embarrassing public relations snafu by inadvertently revealing a fact economists, actuaries, and eugenicists know about but rarely speak about publicly. Governments save huge amounts of money when citizens die prematurely. Philip Morris, one of the world's wealthiest corporations, recently commissioned a study intended to highlight this fact as a selling point to the Czech government, which is considering legislation to regulate cigarette smoking. Philip Morris controls almost 90% of the rapid-growing Czech tobacco market. The study described premature deaths from cancer and emphysema as, quote, indirect positive effects, unquote, of smoking, leaving, quote, savings in public health care costs and state pensions due to early mortality of smokers, unquote. Responsible for millions of deaths in the United States due to smoking in the decades spent hiding the truth about its dangers in the public, Philip Morris is by no means unique in its coldly calculating bottom-line approach to business. Automobiles, pesticides, chemicals, food, biotechnology, pharmaceuticals, and healthcare corporations all factor in similar statistical selling points as they lobby the Congress to prevent legislation from being passed that would prohibit them from doing this, in effect, protecting human life. Ever wonder why U.S. technology can get us to the moon but can't manufacture cars that don't blow up when we hit a wall? Why do 500,000 Americans die each year from nothing more than taking prescription drugs? Did it strike you as peculiar when our compassionate President George Bush wanted to prevent new restrictions on how much arsenic, a deadly poison, would be allowed in our water? Are you curious as to why, in this modern age of refrigeration, there's a steady increase in deaths from food poisoning, or why our food supply is more disease-ridden than at any time in the past 50 years? Is the government's rush to release thousands of untested genetically altered plants, animals, and organisms into the environment scientific overconfidence? Or might it be an indication of a more sinister purpose than helping feed the multitudes? As you watch the news each night, do you ever wonder why so many people are getting cancer, are infertile, having disabling learning disabilities or psychological problems, and thus need a lifetime's worth of expensive prescription drugs in order to function, drugs which will directly shorten their lives? And then it goes on from there to talk about an over-medicated society. And it's kind of interesting that on the one hand, there is no secret that many of the products we're consuming will diminish our immune system, will hurt us. That seems less of an issue than having drugs there to treat the people once they get sick. And the same companies are on both ends of the spectrum. The multinationals have divisions that sell us toxic foods and then treat us with toxic drugs. This comes from Edward Stone. Thank you, Edward, for sending this to me. Lincoln's antidepressants triggered anger. Reuters. A few months into his presidency, Abraham Lincoln stopped taking the blue pills he used to treat his melancholy because they made him cross and scientists said on Tuesday it was good that he stopped taking them. Those pills contain enough mercury to kill him, said retired physician and medical historian Norton Hirshhorn, who wrote a study on the subject. If Lincoln hadn't recognized that the little blue pill he took made him cross and stop the medication, his steady hand at the helm through the Civil War might have been considered less steady, he wrote in the summer issue of the Journal of Perspectives on Biology and Medicine. Scientists recreated a 19th century recipe for what was once known as blue mass that was often prescribed for persistent depression, then known as melancholy or a hypochondriosis. The ingredients included 750 micrograms of mercury, many times the safe level according to health authorities, along with licorice root, rose water, dead rose petals, honey, and sugar. Someone taking the common dose of 2 or 3 pills a day would have seriously risked poisoning themselves. And prior to the start of his presidency, the report said Lincoln was apparently prone to fits of temper, likely attributable to mercury in the pills. The report described an incident in which an angry Lincoln grabbed a man named Ficklin by his coat collar and shook him until his teeth shattered. Lincoln was so angry, his voice shrill and his whole frame shook, and he had to be pulled off the man. We wondered how a man could be described as having the patience of a saint in his 50s when only a few years earlier he was subject to outbursts of rage and bizarre behavior. A Lincoln historian agreed that Lincoln suffered from bouts of depression throughout his life, but he was not aware of temper tantrums. There was certainly the depression, the melancholy, that was commonly known, but as far as the anger, he was very tolerant and patient, rarely flew off the handle, according to one of the historians. But one of the side effects could have been the mercury, and the mercury in those blue pills could have caused that. Well, and by the way, that was prescribed by the best medical minds of the time. This comes the way of Dr. David Wallinga, National Resource Defense Council. Worried about the resurgence in human experiments by pesticide companies, some of which have been testing pesticides on students and other volunteers for decades, the Environmental Protection Agency will adopt a policy of officially ignoring such studies and establishing legal limits for pesticides in food and water, agency officials said yesterday. The decision essentially preempts a long-awaited report by an EPA scientific panel that had been deadlocked for months over the morality of administering pesticides to people to test their safety. A draft of the report released to panel members this week concludes that certain kinds of human experiments are acceptable. The prospect of even a limited EPA endorsement of human experiments had deeply troubled several of the scientists on the panel and outraged environmentalists and some medical ethicists. Studies that dose people intentionally with pesticides are scientifically morally bankrupt, said David Wallinga, physician and senior scientist with the National Resource Defense Council, which has been lobbying against the use of humans in pesticide tests. This is a rerun of the government's test in the 1950s when we lined up soldiers in front of nuclear blasts to see what would happen. My feeling on it is simple. The EPA for years has been completely co-opted at the policymaking level by those who are supporting special interest groups. Once again, the idea that we have objective, fair-minded individuals who are policymakers does not exist. The few who are appointed to these type of panels, once they see the truth, they're almost always outraged, but they are never in the majority. They're only the token amounts. So they'll continue to do this. This comes from Dr. Thomas Pringle of the Sperling Foundation and on mad cow epidemic in humans, according to the variants CJD. And this is from the Daily Express. 2 million children inoculated with BSE vaccines. 7 vaccines potentially at risk of BSE, which is the bovine spongiform encephalopathy, and given to millions of children can be identified for the first time by the Daily Express, but alarmingly, there is no record of which children received the inoculations produced between 1988 and 1989 at the start of Britain's mad cow crisis. The vaccines using UK-sourced cattle material were made by two companies, Wellcome and SmithKline. Despite warnings that they could pose a risk, the seven vaccines were the measles, mumps, rubella, the diphtheria and tetanus, and pertussis. And last night, the Liberal Democrat MP, Norman Baker, who had led a crusade on the issue, accused the Department of Health of being potentially criminally negligent by allowing the BSC risk vaccines to be administered to at least 2 million children for the past 5 years. So far, a lot of people have been killed by the disease, and there's new variant strains. Now, what this means is this, and here's why this is important. How many times have officials at government agencies said, there's nothing to concern yourself with, everything is under control? And then we find out that they allowed manufacturers of vaccines that could have been contaminated to have been used instead of being destroyed in 2 million children, and then didn't keep the records. So I don't know which children or which inoculations they got. That is absolute recklessness. And so there's a double problem. A, the problem of the vaccines that were contaminated with potentially mad cow disease, and because it takes time to evolve within the person, there could be ticking time bombs in millions of these children. So 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, they could be dying of mad cow disease of the human variant forms, simply because of greed, indifference, and the special interest power of Burroughs Wellcome and SmithKline in manipulating public health issues to their advantage. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today, talking about health issues. I'm going to be opening our calls now to people, and my number again is 212-209-2900. I'm sorry I can't take calls from the listeners in other areas of the country. I will be able to do those calls when 2 weeks now, or after 2 weeks, about 15, 16 days now, when I return for a few days, I'll be able to do those. But I will be doing some calls specifically for KPFK next Wednesday morning, and WPFW next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday. But this week is just people in the tri-state New York area who can call in because of limitations in our technological hookup capacity. So 212-209-2900. And let's see who's on the line and what the issue is. Hi, what's your name, please?
Hi, Gary. This is Kane calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kane.
How are you?
Good.
I have a question. I just picked up the Village Voice today, and they're doing a cover story on the use of Malathion, if I said it correctly.
Malathion.
Right, and they're going to... They just did a big article. I was wondering maybe if you can provide some more information on that. I know it's a highly toxic chemical. But, I mean, what can we do being the public? I mean, here we're getting sprayed with this highly toxic chemical. I mean, what can we do?
There are several things that can be done, but unfortunately not enough people have committed themselves to doing this. You have 16 million people living in the tri-state area who are, at least 10 million of those people are susceptible of being sprayed with malathion. Malathion has neurological effects. People who have gone out with their dogs or their children to play in the park while the spraying had just occurred have ended up with asthma, upper respiratory tract infections, neurological problems. People who have been convalescing, it has exacerbated their convalescence. And we believe that it has been responsible for some serious effects, but unfortunately what happens is it's difficult if a person is sick to attribute any exposure to malathion, which in and of itself doesn't have a unique or original causative factor, but would affect someone, let's say, who is already sick. So you can't say, ah, you're sick because of this or because of that. It doesn't work that way. How it works is, let's say if you had cancer and you're at home and you've had chemotherapy and you've had radiation and then there's exposure to malathion, your immune system would take a hit and therefore could precipitate the immune system being so diminished that a secondary cancer could manifest. Or you could have a collapse in your respiratory system, your renal failure, or your liver. Anything could go out. And that's why we don't always say, okay, we sprayed, and a public health official once again will say, well, there was no adverse effects. There's no way to determine how many adverse effects unless someone had an acute episode, but acute episodes are the rare. Chronic episodes are the problem. And also, where does that malathion go? When you go out and you play and you bring a dog out and comes back into your home, the dog's now got the malathion on its paws. It's going to be on your couch and the rugs. You're going to walk around, you're going to pick it up, and you're going to get it on you and in you. You cannot seal a house well enough to keep the malathion from venting in. Now, this time of year, when people are using air conditioners, the air conditioner is bringing in air and through an air transfer and cooling it. It's bringing in malathion with it. So I consider malathion spraying a grossly irresponsible public health act. If appropriate concern had been taken to had tried to prevent the mosquito larva from being a problem to begin with, but it was too little, too late. The preventative program was tokenism. And now, because we did not have a mass outpouring of public concern, we're going to have it. So my suggestion is that that reach out to those groups that are supporting a challenge to malathion spraying or any other mass spraying. And if you go to GaryNall.com, under public health issues, under malathion spraying, you'll see which coalitions are working. Now, last year, the year before last, we managed to get malathion stop spraying for almost a season. And it was not a lot of us that did it. It was just maybe about 30 of us. And I think there were six of us that testified. What was interesting is when the head of the CDC's division on this and the New York State Department of Health division on this, when they came, the whole city council was there. And they had about, and they were given an inordinate amount of time, and they were not asked hard questions. And it was embarrassing. I was sitting there listening to them, and it was more of a PR campaign than anything. And then when they had finished, and we, the people, went forward, and those of us who are concerned scientists and consumers went forward, there were two people left to listen to us. And at one point, there was only one person, one council person that we're speaking with. It's as if the whole rest of the council said, okay, we've heard from the important people now. We're going to not be bothered by this. Now, I thought that was really very, first, it was very rude of the city council, but it also showed you how indifferent a council can be and where their allegiance was. So then you go to the press, and you're more likely to find some openness within the press, but you want to go to the press with facts. And we do have the facts. We have all the facts necessary to create a public concern over this massive spraying of a toxin. My suggestion is that you get those facts, write a letter to the editors, and send the editor of every newspaper, every periodical in the tri-state area, asking them would they do a feature story on it. Now, sometimes they'll say, well, we did the stories. Well, what you did back then has, you know, is not relevant to what is happening today. This is a new day. Let's take a look at this. We have new material. We have additional material. We've been collecting data on malathion all along, or other sprays that they've used instead of malathion, which show that they're just as much of a problem. So get your facts. Write up some concern letters. Send them in a polite tone to the editors of every different publication, which is over 160 publications just in New York, tri-state area, the ones that would be affected by the spraying, and see if you can't cause some public notice on it. Okay?
Yes.
We'll take another call. What's your name, please?
Thank you.
Uh-huh. You're on the air. What's your name, please?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Gary. My name is Adele, and it's an honor speaking with you. I go way back. I was associate with Dr. Curcio many years ago. Anyway, my question has to do with my thyroid and Hashimoto's. And my meaning that it's an autoimmune condition, possibly, according to definition, and that my immune system seems, according to what I read, sees my tissue, a thyroid tissue, as an enemy. So my question is, what causes my immune system to distort its perception and to see my thyroid tissue as an enemy and fights it? Two, and how can I change my lifestyle with commitment to for the perception of my immune system to see it normal and that it shouldn't attack me? According to my test, Gary, I take 1 grain of Armour, and I have a low normal T4, normal T3 uptake, TSH is good normal, T3 total is good, but down below, I'm reading antithyroid globulin high, 88.7, and the norm range is 0 to 39.9. So that's what I'm asking you.
Have you gone to a holistic physician?
Pardon?
Have you gone to
Yes.
a holistic physician, and what have they suggested?
Well, the only thing they have suggested is, just to possibly eat the organic foods properly and whatever and keep on the thyroid. Evidently, since I have a normal with the 1 grain of the thyroid, what I just read you, but I'm concerned about this antithyroid globulin, which is 48.8 points higher than the normal range.
There's a couple of things that you should examine here. First of all, the body is always trying to balance itself. The first rule of life is homeostasis. And with homeostasis, in effect, the body is saying, what do we have to do to conserve energy? Almost all nutrients that go into the body, no matter what you eat, no matter what vitamins, herbs, minerals you take, the number one rule is homeostasis. Do you understand what that means?
Yes.
Okay. Balance. Now, the second rule is energy. So no matter what you consume, the body tries to convert it into a usable form of energy that can sustain life. Are you clear with me still?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the gland that helps regulate that, there are actually several. The adrenal gland, the pituitary gland, the thyroid gland are three of the primary glands, but not exclusively, that will come to the first line of defense. Now, when you suffer from any form of thyroid activity, either hyperthyroidism, which is an overly aggressive, where you produce too much thyroid hormone, resulting in an overactive metabolic state, everything is speeded up. You get nervous, irritable, you have a constant feeling of being hot, you sweat a lot, you can't sleep, and yet you suffer from fatigue. Everything is, including, you're weak and your hair is brittle and you lose weight. And all that's because you're going too fast. Frequently it's due to a Graves' disease, or what is also called thyroxetosis. And again, you have to detoxify the system in order to re-regulate the system. It's as if the clock on the wall is spinning, the little second hand is spinning, the one hand, minute hand spinning faster than the actual time. The other end of that spectrum is hypoglycemia. And hypoglycemia is more likely clear to what you would have and unfortunately, most people aren't even aware of the symptoms of hypoglycemia, but this is why we have a nation suffering from fatigue. And hypoglycemia is where you have abnormally low levels of blood sugar, which causes the oversecretion of insulin by the pancreas. And insulin facilitates the transport of glucose, which is your sugar, from the bloodstream into the cells, and especially those in the muscles and the fatty tissue, and causes glucose to be synthesized in the liver. If the pancreas is not functioning properly, normal carbohydrate metabolism isn't possible. So then you have to ask yourself, well, have you had symptoms of fatigue and dizziness and lightheadedness and headaches and irritability and depression and anxiety and cravings for sweet and confusion and night sweats and weakness in your legs and swollen feet, or feeling a tightness in your chest, or constant hunger, or nervous habits, or insomnia? Because those are part of hypoglycemia. Now, have you had any symptoms of hypoglycemia?
Perhaps I've had maybe the insomnia a little, and the sweets to a degree. But the rest, I don't have any of the symptoms. Fatigue I may have,
All right.
I have, you know, of course I'm on the other end of the spectrum of hypothyroid. Yes,
I understand, but I'm showing you a bridge.
I got it.
Okay, I'm showing you that you don't go from hyper to hypothyroidism. You go from the two extremes to hypoglycemia, because you have to first look at your blood sugar before you look at your thyroid.
Oh, I see.
Do you understand?
Yes, Gary.
Okay, and unfortunately, this is the blind spot that doctors
don't...
That's
right, dear. Yeah.
Understand how we're going here?
Yes, dear.
Okay.
Yes, I see it.
All right, so then what we're going to do, we're going to now we can look at hypothyroidism. And hypothyroidism, for those in the audience who are not familiar with it, and also a condition called Hashimoto's. She's been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, which is believed to be the most common cause of underactive thyroid. And
yes,
in this disorder, the body, quite simply, is allergic to thyroid hormone. And Hashimoto's disease is common, it's a common cause of goiter. And goiter is that swelling under the neck. And measuring levels of different hormones in the blood can determine if the thyroid gland is working properly, and a physician will order a blood test. And generally, the thyroid-stimulating hormone, the TSH, and it's secreted by the pituitary gland, and in turn helps regulate the thyroid hormone production. Even tiny amounts, tiny drop in the thyroid function registers a distinctly elevated TSH level. And most endocrinologists believe that TSH levels rise when a person is in the earliest stages of thyroid failure. And the hypothyroidism is caused by the underproduction of thyroid hormone. Now, the symptoms of fatigue due to hypoglycemia,
yes, I have,
are identical to the fatigue of hypothyroidism. The connection is that frequently a person becomes hypoglycemic, which can lead then to a hypothyroid condition due to carbohydrate intolerance. And rarely do you find a doctor who will say, let's check your carbohydrate intolerance and build up the immune system. And the reason that you have an autoimmune reaction is not because you have a specific inherited allergic reaction, as they would like us to believe. I don't believe that for a second. In fact, I've never seen that be the case. Instead, it is because your body has become toxic through the toxic reactions over a period of time, acute and chronic. You have developed an intolerance to carbohydrates, even in small amounts. In turn, that has caused the body's immune system to be overstimulated, which then causes anytime you have anything, it overstimulates, it has to rebalance, and it comes back, and generally comes back exhausted. So you go from overstimulation to underactivity, and when the body's immune system is underactive, that's when you have allergic reactions. Allergic reactions almost always happen when the immune system has been overstimulated for a period of time. Then it no longer can maintain itself and drops precipitously. In that dropped or lowered precipitate place, then the body's allergic responses start to happen, and then you find that you're allergic to all forms of things, not just thyroid to thyroid, a hormone to the thyroid, but you're also allergic to almost 80% of the things you'll eat. You could get an IgG or IgA-mediated response, where before you wouldn't. Now, I'll give you an example of this. By the way, do you follow me up to this point?
Yes, I follow you, and all the things that just the symptoms you're saying are true.
Okay. So now here's how I approach this. Give an example. I see a person who has had gone to 7 different holistic physicians, spent over $7,300. All they could do is keep giving these people elimination diets. Person hands me a sheet and shows me 66 foods that they can no longer consume. Now they have candida. The candida is really out of control. And what do they suggest? And I say, forget all this. This is not what's important. What's important is building up the immune system. When you build up the immune system, you're going to turn off the allergic response. When you turn off the allergic response, your body's not going to continue attacking itself.
Right.
The person says, well, why didn't these doctors, you know, tell me? Because they're not aware of it. That's all. So the whole idea is to stimulate immune response. Now, there's a lot of things we can do to build up the immune system. One of the first, it's actually 3 stages. Stage 1 is you must do a complete and total cleansing program to rejuvenate the liver, the kidneys, the spleen. Those are your primary points where you want great toxic relief. All right, and juices are the best way of doing that. Vegetable juices and fruit juices like watermelon juice. One of the juices I was mentioning earlier in the program, watermelon lemon, one of the best single natural detoxifiers you could put into your system, especially for the liver. Then you want to rebuild. Now, rejuvenating tissue, especially glandular tissue, is done primarily with herbs. And also with, very important, is with the red fruits. Mm-hmm. Raspberries, cherries, cranberries, blood oranges, pink grapefruit, strawberries, watermelon, pomegranate, red mango, red papaya, pink grapefruit, currants, red grapes. Those are the fruits known to have phytochemicals that repair damage to the genes. And in effect, what we're doing is we're repairing genes so that they'll get the right signal and carry the right message.
Yes,
now,
that's right.
So that way we can rebuild our genetic structure, eliminate toxic burden upon the system, and then the final step would be to take those herbs known to help immune modulation, such as echinacea, astragalus, pau d'arco, bee propolis, red clover, dong quai, passion flower, bilberry extract, and those nutrients known to stimulate immune function, vitamin C, rutin, quercetin, vitamin A, the mixed tocopherol E, and glutathione, reduced form, and activated quercetin, reduced form. So if you do this in a step-by-step process, mm-hmm. 3 things should start to manifest. A, you'll start to see that your body stops attacking itself once the cleansing and repair mechanisms have kicked in. Secondly, your body's immune system rises, allergies drop, you'll have more energy, but without being hyper, it'll be an even energy. And you'll start noticing you sleep better and wake up refreshed. Then your thyroid test should start to be normalizing.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll probably be a change in diagnosis from Hashimoto's to a chronic hypothyroidism, and in time to a non-hypothyroidism.
I see.
Okay?
Yes, dear.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. You're brilliant, and I remember, and you spoke to Dr. Curcio a long time ago.
Yes, I remember Dr. Curcio.
Yes, so thank you so much, and
okay.
Bless you, and tomorrow is my Sabbath. I'm going to put a candle for you. I was going to ask you, if you had one wish, Gary, what would you like?
To end human suffering.
End human suffering. All right. I'm going to say that beside your candle tomorrow night.
Thank you. Bye. I'm Gary Null. We have time for one more call. Go ahead, please. What's your name?
My name is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Is
Tom?
Gary?
Yes.
Yes. I have a quick question. My wife took a job at a hospital just yesterday, and they want to give her a hepatitis B vaccine, and I want to know if she's putting herself in any jeopardy in doing. I'm inclined not to let her do it, but I wanted to ask you about it.
Okay. Working in a hospital is putting yourself in jeopardy. All you have to do is check to see what are the most common infections that an individual would be susceptible to in a hospital setting. We know that hospitals cause 10,000 people to die each year from infections they get from being in the hospital, and those are patients at varying levels of health. My suggestion would be that you should first go to my webpage and read everything you can about hepatitis B. I do have that information there. Separately, I would suggest that you call Lou Ann Panessi, who was the at Long Island Jewish Hospital for 18 years. She's one of the managers. She had been an intensive care nurse, and she had hepatitis. She had a lot of other conditions from working in that environment. And cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, Coxsackie virus, mycoplasmin, and those were from, as she said, from her workspace. So you have to ask yourself, in the long run, is there some way of protecting yourself? Yes. So that you don't become a victim of the very environment you're trying to be in to help people. And we need hospitals. We need nurses. We need technicians. But we need to provide them with better protection. Right now, I do not believe that protection's in place. I believe that could be. It's just not principles being done. After all, babies died out in Arizona this year because some nurses in the neonatal section didn't clean under their fingernails, and the newborn infants picked up an infection from under the fingernails and died. That was just this year. So I would suggest that your wife take a look at the hepatitis B literature so at least she knows what the potential danger is. Then you can make a proper decision. We're out of time. I'm looking at the clock. If you want to call Lou Ann Panessi, she's over at the MedFont Wellness Center. She's at 212-252-1942. You all have a nice day. I'll look forward to sharing more with you tomorrow.